And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of February 27th, 2022. The global carbon dioxide level is currently 419.23 parts per million, and there are 2,865 days left until the year 2030. The clock keeps ticking. So here in Massachusetts, we have a plan for that 2030 date, and in fact, beyond. The Next Generation Roadmap for Climate here in Massachusetts is a working document that needs to be enhanced and completed by our continuing efforts. One of those efforts has to do with buildings, and that's what we're going to talk about today. Today, we're going to ask the question, what is a building code? I'm going to ask the question, why are building codes a climate issue? What's going on right now in the building code climate connection? And what can you do about it? So let's begin with the question of what the heck is a building code? And everyone has a sense of what a building code is. It's essentially the rules that apply in a particular community for how new structures will be made, right? This has to do with a lot of mundane stuff, right? The building code regulates the tread size on the steps. The building code regulates whether or not you have a handrail to get into your house. It regulates how many outlets are in each room and how far apart they are. Okay, there's all sorts of rules about how you build a structure that you might not think about, but whoever builds a structure does. And they have to follow the building code. And of course, building codes are always evolving. Down in Florida in the 90s, after a big hurricane, Florida upgraded all their building codes because they saw that roofs were blowing off buildings. So they put a new building code in that said you had to have more hurricane tie downs to keep the roof on. Right? I know here in Massachusetts, between the time that my house was constructed and now, they've added the requirement that your gas heater be vented to the outside. Right? So these are all building code issues that define what's called the built environment. Our houses, the big box store you go to, place you work, etc., etc. Of course, here in Massachusetts, the state essentially defines the building codes and provides local communities with some options as to what they want to do. And so that's an interesting point. So that's what building codes are. Building codes tell you how to build a structure. In particular, we're thinking about new structures. So then the question is, why are building codes a climate issue? I mean, what's the connection? Well, of course, the Massachusetts Roadmap sets targets for carbon dioxide emissions in the year 2030 and in 2050. And in fact, by the year 2050, Massachusetts' goal is to be what's called net zero. That is to say, between the carbon dioxide we do emit and the carbon dioxide we capture as a state, we are emitting zero carbon dioxide and net zero carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. Okay, so with their dramatic emissions cuts foreseen in the roadmap between now and 2050 for Massachusetts, turns out that in Massachusetts, residences and buildings account for a significant fraction of our carbon dioxide emissions. Okay. Where those carbon dioxide emissions come from? Mostly from burning oil or gas to heat your home. Okay, that's the residential component. It's something like 20% of all of the emissions in the state come from heating our homes and cooking, and a few, but mostly from heating our homes, right? It's in the built environment, there's carbon dioxide emissions you don't even think about, but they're a big component of what the state puts out. In addition, recently there have been questions about indoor air quality that come from using natural gas to cook your food, right? That familiar, comforting blue flame underneath your teapot, in fact, is generating particulates and leaking methane and doing all kinds of bad things. So indoor air quality, of course, is pertinent to building codes, right? So you've got this situation where there's a lot of carbon dioxide coming from buildings in the state of Massachusetts. Massachusetts has a goal to reduce carbon dioxide emissions in those buildings. And what the heck are you going to do about it? Well, here's where the question begins to split. Here in Massachusetts, if we think about buildings in the year 2050, okay, and you think about the year 2022, there's lots and lots of existing buildings. And then there's new buildings that will be built between now and 2050. In fact, the state estimates that between now and 2050, something like 27% of the structures that will exist in 2050 will have been built after 2022. Right? So the new construction is an important component of the problem we're trying to solve in 2050. And so it makes perfect sense to talk about building residences and buildings in 2022 and 2023 that are compatible with our goal in 2050. Right? And that's going to mean revamping the building codes to change the way we heat, cool, make our water, hot water, et cetera, et cetera. Right? These are all, that's the connection between climate change and the building codes that we need to prepare for the 2050 built environment by getting as much of it as we can compatible. So again, there's two issues here. One, you've got a whole lot of buildings that already stand that will continue to be standing in 2050, and we have to retrofit them somehow. But also you've got new buildings that will be built between now and 2050, and it's insane to not make them compatible with the 2050 emissions goals. So what's going on right now? I mean, why are we talking about building codes here in late February of 2022 that looks out to 2050? Well, it turns out the roadmap bill that was passed last year, the Next Generation Roadmap for Massachusetts, calls for a revision of building codes so that our new buildings are compatible with the 2050 goal. That is to say, we need to think about the new buildings we're constructing. There's a deadline for the release of those revised building codes. It's December of 2023, which at this point is only 9 months away. And here in February of 2022, the DOER has released what's called a straw proposal for the revision of the building codes in the state of Massachusetts. And they are taking comments on those building codes now, and they hope to formalize the whole thing by December, according to the roadmap. That's why we need to talk about building codes in the here and now, and stretch our brains a little bit around what does it mean? What are the implications? Well, I'll put up links to the presentation from DOER about the proposed straw building codes, but there's a little vocabulary that underlays it. We'll probably need to get down. The DOER is talking about three different levels of building code that become more and more aggressive in terms of carbon dioxide reduction. Again, these are building codes for new buildings being offered by the state. One is called the baseline code, which is a code that follows sort of a national standard. It's upgraded on a regular basis. It is, in fact, getting more and more energy efficient, the baseline code. But that's just a baseline. Okay. Here in Massachusetts, there's about 50 communities or so that follow the baseline code. Above the baseline code, there's a slightly more aggressive building code called a stretch code. Now, the stretch code vocabulary goes all the way back to 2008 when the Green Communities Act was formulated, right? Green communities, a community could become green and therefore qualify for other kinds of state money and grants. They could become green if they adopted what was called a stretch code. And in 2008, it was a stretch because you had to work hard to reduce your carbon dioxide emissions from homes, right? So the stretch codes were existed. They were adopted. They've been in most, it turns out most towns in Massachusetts use the stretch code. There's something like 299 communities in Massachusetts have become quote unquote green communities, right? They abide by the stretch code, which is a more aggressive carbon dioxide reduction. Fine, fine. The third level, and presumably the most aggressive level, was explicitly called out in the roadmap bill, right? And it's, and that bill said that the state shall issue a building code called the Net Zero Building Code, right? That would be opt-in for communities that wanted to do it. Right? So this is not required, but it's a really aggressive kind of aspirational code to get your buildings to be the best they can be that a community, if they wanted to, could adopt. Right? So the net zero community opt-in code was imagined to be that kind of a thing. And of course, under net zero, basically what you're imagining is that everything in the house is electric and that electricity is clean. So now the whole house is clean, right? Your heating, your cooking, your gas, I'm sorry, your hot water, your washer and dryer, everything's run by electricity. And that electricity is, as I say, clean. So that basically comes out to be net zero for a home. You have to make a building code. And what's implicit in that building code to be net zero is that you cannot have a gas hookup. Right? Now, that might make people's heads explode, but that's why this is a opt-in code. You may be aware that Brookline has been trying to get to ban gas in new buildings for some time. It's been going back and forth about it. So there's your vocabulary, your baseline code, the stretch code, and the net zero opt-in, what the DOER sometimes refers to as a specialized code. Okay? So let's just stop for a minute and be very specific about what a net zero building code is intended to do. I'll put up a link to a one-page PDF that explains, has all this in it. But let me just say that the definition of a net zero building is that it is energy efficient, all electric, with low embodied carbon, and that it achieves its carbon neutrality either in operation, like in when you're living in it, either through the production of electricity using solar panels or something on the roof, or by procuring renewable energy credits from someplace else. Okay, so that's what a net zero building is defined to be by a wide range of industry people who have worked on creating something called the net zero building code. Let me just go back through that. Net zero means it's energy efficient, which means you have all good insulation. You know, your windows are tight. You got insulation in the attic, right? Everything is up to snuff in terms of the building envelope, as they call it. That is a good seal, right? That internal to that building, everything is run on electricity. It's just so, as again, you've got an induction stovetop. You have heat pumps keeping the house warm. You have electric water heating, et cetera, right? So the house is highly efficient in terms of, you know, escaping energy. It's using all electricity. It has something called low embodied carbon. That is to say, the amount of carbon dioxide that is emitted in building, in making the components of the house, is small. Okay, so like how much carbon dioxide is involved in making the glass that goes into your window at the factory and wherever they made the glass. Right? That's embodied carbon that you need to think about. Okay? Ultimately, the net zero building achieves its net zero status by doing one of two things. In everyday operation, it generates electricity of its own to match what it needs, right? So now you're thinking about solar panels on the roof. Or if it's not, doesn't have solar panels on the roof, then you're procuring renewable energy credits to cover the difference, right? And of course, that last thing mostly attains to commercial buildings, right? I can easily imagine a house that gets all of its electricity from renewable sources, has no gas in it. That's net zero. Whereas but doesn't have solar panels. Whereas your favorite box store can put a bunch of solar panels on the roof, right, and then generate their electricity that way. Blah blah blah. So that's what the definition of a net zero building is, and we want a building code that ensures that. Okay, and that's an important thing we're working on. Underneath that definition, you have the idea of carbon neutrality. That is to say that you don't want these buildings to be emitting net carbon dioxide. And you want to, the second goal is that you want to develop this building code in a way that protects disadvantaged communities. Right? You don't want to be making some nifty code that only rich people can buy into, right? Or that only well-to-do people can take advantage of the savings, because it's going to be cheaper to run a home if it's all electric, right? So neutrality and equity are important goals in the net zero building code. And remember, this net zero building code is an opt-in code for communities that choose to do it. It's not mandatory. And so it should be as aggressive as possible to give the most aggressive communities the chance to do the most aggressive things. All right. So that's what a net zero building code is. Turns out in the beginning of February, DOER, the Department of Energy Resources here in Massachusetts, was mandated to do this revision of the building codes. They put out what they called a straw proposal, which is kind of a first draft of the baseline, stretch, and net zero codes. Again, they call it specialized opt-in, but that's what the law calls for a net zero building code. And right now, during the week of March 2nd through the 8th, they're having listening sessions online, and they are taking comments about this straw proposal they put out there. That's why this is a climate issue, because this is a chance to make a comment on or critique the building code proposal they put out. Okay? So let's do that. Let's talk about specifically about a critique of the net zero building code proposed by the DOER at the beginning of February, which they hope to implement by the end of the year. All right. So what's wrong with the building code that the DOER put out? Well, first and foremost, and perhaps maddeningly, DOER put out a net zero building code that allows natural gas hookups, right? So, boom, right from the very beginning, you say you violated the spirit of the net zero code, right? It's not supposed to have gas in it. Why do you allow natural gas into the building code, right? So just to begin with, the building code that the DOER has put out violates the law in the sense that it's not truly a net zero building code. It's not within the spirit, certainly, of what the intention of the legislators were, to give a building code that does not use gas in any form. Another place where the building code that has been promulgated by the DOER under the pretense of being a net zero building code is that it violates an equity standard, in the sense that there's no effort to take care of disadvantaged communities so the disadvantaged communities don't get stranded with higher cost natural gas buildings, right? Nor does the Building code concerned itself with how the workforce would be trained in order to build these things. Those are things that could be included. It turns out that the idea of embodied carbon dioxide, that is to say, the carbon dioxide that was used to produce the components of your building, right? How much carbon dioxide went into the cement in your front, in the foundation, right? That's completely ignored and should not be. It should be part of a building code to require those materials to be low carbon emitters in their manufacture. The new building code does not require 100% renewables. It just steps over that net zero idea. So you're not required to have renewables on your building to get to the 100% renewable goal. The new building code ignores the idea that net zero buildings need to be tested, commissioned, as they would, you might say, to make sure that the design of the building lives up to the net zero behavior that you want. So there has to be some sort of check after the fact, after the building's been made, that in fact you are where you intended to be with your green design. That's ignored by the commission. Another thing that the commission ignores is refrigerants. That is to say, even in your heat pump, there are gases used that might be these chlorofluorocarbon kind of things that you get in air conditioners, right? Those, the building code should specify that the refrigerant used in those heat pumps is also low climate impact, not greenhouse gas, not a greenhouse gas like the super greenhouse gas refrigerants are that we're aware of. Yet another place where the building code has, the proposed building code is not optimized is that it gives lots of room for local communities to wiggle around and change the rules in a way that basically kill the idea of net zero, right? So the opportunity for waivers at the local level from the net zero building code need to be very narrow, and the building code as it stands does not allow that. Finally, there are final two things. One is that the whole proposal, we talked about the stretch code in the net zero code. So the stretch code, you remember, is what would be obeyed by all the green communities. The 299 communities that have become green have agreed already to abide by the stretch code. And the stretch code currently will allow you to put in a natural gas hookup. What the DOER in its newest building code has not done is to somehow incentivize the green communities to go to the net zero building code, to take the next big step and say, we're not going to use any more natural gas. That's a problem. Finally, we need to emphasize to the DOER that the need is urgent, that we have to get this building code passed this year, because if it drifts into 2023, 2024, we lose the opportunity, right? Every day matters in terms of building buildings that will still be standing in 2050, right? We need to make those buildings compatible with our state goals. So that's some of the complaints about the building code as it's been promulgated. What I would suggest you do is go to the links that I'm going to put in the pages. You can see the whole video offered by DOER describing these building codes. It's quite interesting just to see. And there's all the slides are online. You can check out everything I said, see if you agree with the analysis that I have. You can look at that. But in particular, there's two things can be done. One is there will be listening sessions, online listening sessions, over the week of March 2nd through the 8th. You can join one of those. I'll put up links in the blog as to how you can get there. The blog will be at on the MCAN website, right? You can go there, sign up for those. The other thing you can do is to submit an email or comment to DOER. And this is a little funky. You have to send an email to an email address called stretchcode@mass.gov. Okay, that's the place that's receiving comments on the stretch code. And the subject line has to be stretch code straw proposal comments. Right, that's how the DOER is flagging the comments on the stretch code. What you can do is I'll put, again, yet another link at the on the show page that has suggested emails that you can send in. Right? You can review the things we've talked about here and send in your own comments. So there's something going on right now that's important for the year 2050. It's important for how we address climate. It's the net zero building code discussion. I urge you to take a look at all the stuff that's available to think about this and to try and take some action. So the links, we'll put up links on the blog at the Mass Climate Action website. Turns out that to get to the podcast, you go to massclimateaction.org or just Google Mass Climate Action Network, right? Get to massclimateaction.org. You look across the top banner for what's called newsletter and more, and you pull that down. Underneath that, it says blog and podcast, and that's where the podcast is in blog format with all the hot links. So that's where you can go check things out. If you have a comment about the show or ideas of things we ought to be talking about, send us an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net, right? As opposed to org. Let us know what we ought to be talking about. You can listen to the show on your smartphone using one of the modern podcast distribution apps. Please ask all of your friends to listen to us on their smartphones. I want to thank our good friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. I want to close where we always close by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. And because of that, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon that respects environmental justice communities. So thanks for listening. Talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.